Did you know depression is the number one cause of global disability, costs humanity more than anything? And guess what? Because people don't think of this like a medical illness, snap out of it, I'm weak if I ask for help, it prevents them from actually getting the life-saving medications and care and treatment that they need. So we very much have to break down barriers of stigma and misunderstanding so we can identify people suffering in silence and connect them to the care they need. We know that not treating depression is actually what kills people.
Hey, we're just going to break in here for a second at WUSB Stony Brook to let you know that Off the Wall will be starting about 15 minutes late because somebody else started Democracy Now 15 minutes late. We don't want to start this conversation, this important dialogue. Please show your support for this kind of sacrifice. 631-632-6901. Pledge your support. Let's go back to Democracy Now! We'll see you in about 15 minutes.
And we're going to get to those questions. What you ask someone, does it have to be a professional asking? Can it be a friend asking? In 30 seconds, because we're going to break now. We're speaking to Dr. Kelly Posner-Gerstenhaber, professor of psychiatry at Columbia University, founder and director of the Columbia Lighthouse Project. Stay with us.
Again, Off the Wall will be coming up in just a few minutes. Please show your support for WUSB, 631-632-6901. We're in pledge mode, or go to WUSB.fm.
By John Frusciante. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Our guest is Dr. Kelly Posner-Gerstenhaber, professor of psychiatry at Columbia University. Dr. Gerstenhaber, you are the principal author of the Columbia Protocol. What is it? What are the questions that need to be asked?
So these few simple questions that can and should be in everybody's hand go as follows. It starts with, have you wished you were dead, or go to sleep and not wake up, or have you actually had thoughts of killing yourself? And if that's yes, have you thought about how you might do this? Have you had these thoughts and had some intention of acting on them, or have you started to work out or worked out the details of how to kill yourself? Do you intend to carry out this plan? And then, have you ever done anything, started to do anything, or prepared to do anything to end your life, like collecting pills, writing a note, buying a gun? And we know if they say, I had some intention to act on these thoughts, that's when risk goes up 50%, and we know somebody's at more imminent risk and needs help. Also, if they had any of those behaviors, things we were never asking about before.
But when do parents or loved ones or friends ask this question? Because obviously there's a reluctance to even broach the subject.
There is, and that's what people need to understand. When people are suffering, they actually want to be asked. And in the past, friends or parents didn't know what questions to ask. They didn't know what to do with the answers, and they didn't know if somebody wanted to be asked. So now we have the tools. Every set of these questions comes with the next steps. And the most important thing you can, when you think something's just not right or somebody looks like they're not themselves, ask the questions. Now, if you go into the primary care office, you'll get it like blood pressure. But here, every family member, every community member, every loved one, every teacher can actually have a set of questions that they can use if they feel it would be helpful.
But so often at a very difficult time, a person either goes into a shell, becomes less communicative, or the opposite, much more aggressive, alienating people. It seems to be the most difficult time to ask questions like these.
Well, I think that that's not what we find. You know, when people are suffering in silence and they're feeling depressed, they actually want to be asked. And we often assume that they're going to have the will to come to us. And they often don't. That's why we need to come to them. And again, when people are suffering, They want to feel better. They just don't know that they can. So it's to connect them and identify that pain they're going through. And very often, you know, depression actually does present like that. Aggression, irritability, and it all can be a symptom of exactly the same thing. And again, the more we ask, the more we identify directly, identify suicidal feelings directly, the more we're going to help people get the treatment they need to save their lives and reduce this terrible suffering. And the beautiful part of this, or the one of the positive outcomes, is that now the community can be engaged in something positive and meaningful that can actually help save lives and prevent these terrible tragedies we're dealing with again in the last few days.
I want to ask you, in the last couple of months, there were two Stanford University students who died by suicide. One of them was an athlete who had won a silver medal with their cycling team at the 2016 Olympic Games. Are there any particular groups of young people that might be subjected to more pressures that might get them to think of suicide? For instance, I'm thinking of athletes in particular that you've dealt with.
Not really. This is the biggest cause is this medical illness called depression, right? And it's the second leading cause of death in 10 to 24-year-olds. But your point is an important one. You know, Princeton came to me first. Let's give these questions to the athletic coaches, to the resident advisors. So the point is, everybody suffers and is at high risk for depression and for suicide, but how do we find them and connect them? So putting these questions in the hands of the coach and the teacher and the peer is really, really important. This isn't about, you know, pressure or being at a school where academic pressure is bad or is increased or, you know, you're an athlete and you have more pressure because of those demands. It's really because of this, you know, the biggest cause, again, is this medical illness that we suffer from and we need to identify.
And what do you say to schools for how they should deal with this? Like, for example, Juan just mentioned the two Stanford students, one after the other in the same division in math and engineering, grad students, one in her dorm room, the other in his lab. What should schools do? And are kids afraid of coming forward, young people, students, that they might be thrown out of a school because they don't want to sully their reputation? The school wants to make sure someone like this doesn't wreck their record.
Yes, students are afraid to speak out and get help because of all of that stigma, where we don't think of this like any other medical illness. What schools can do is screen as much as they can, arm people with the way to identify people. You know, college presidents worry very much about the liability of suicide. You know, a history of a suicide attempt is the number one risk factor when they come in for their health screens. Ask a few questions. Find people who, you know, who need ongoing monitoring, et cetera. When you start to treat this like any other illness, like asthma, you know, like blood pressure, et cetera, we will break down those barriers and get kids the help that they need.
And what about the situations, for instance, the two students from Parkland, those who survive mass shootings? There's generally immediate grief counseling provided by the schools, but this now happens a year later. What kind of ongoing support is necessary for young people who have survived mass shootings?
Yeah, so long-term outcomes for survivors of shootings are really improved with community connections and continuing access to mental health treatment. So, and empowering them with, particularly with student and community efforts. And in the short term, we know that medications help very much with anxiety reduction, and PTSD is a form of anxiety. We know that there are skills that can be given. And you know, mechanisms in addition to medication that will continue to reinforce thinking and writing and talking about the traumas that they've gone through.
Sydney Aiello's mom, the 19-year-old young woman, survivor of the massacre who just took her own life last weekend, she said she suffered from PTSD and from survivor's guilt. What does that mean, and what did you find when you went to Parkland and talking to students and family members?
Well, I originally went to Parkland to work with the community to help them start to figure out how to identify and put the Columbia Protocol in people's hands. But what we know is that survival guilt has long been connected to PTSD after lots of traumatic incidents like Holocaust, combat survivors. You know, and we know that, again, when you add that on top of a baseline mental health issue like depression or anxiety, the risk just goes up even farther. And people don't know how to deal with the distorted beliefs that they have from the PTSD, you know, perceived responsibility, they could have done something, you know, et cetera. So we really need to get at, you know, helping give them the tools to address the trauma that they're dealing with, probably on top of other anxieties and depression after these terrible incidents.
And what is the medical community, in your view, not doing? And I would include in the medical community the insurance companies that have a lot to say over what kind of treatment people get in terms of dealing with these mental health issues.
I think one of the most important things that we're dealing with as a society and the medical community, the biggest barrier to effective treatment is stigma. You know that since we have antidepressants, for example, the suicide rate has dropped dramatically across the world, across ages, reversing a trend prior to their introduction. However, 50 to 75% of people who need those medications do not get them, because of stigma and people not wanting to access treatment because they don't think of this like any other medical illness.
We're going to ask you to stay with us, and we're going to post online part two of this discussion. I want to ask you about veterans. Also, to talk to you about...
Hey, what's going on? It's Bill Byrne. It's time for the Monday Morning Podcast for Monday, March 25th, 2019. What's going on? How are you?
Health Sciences. Your environment is your health.
During this warm season, we'd like to remind all bicyclists to take safety along for the ride, too. Wear a helmet, approach intersections with caution, yield to pedestrians, and stay as far to the right as possible. Remember, motorists often don't expect bicyclists to be on the roadways. So enjoy the beautiful weather that's in our future and ride with caution. And take safety along for the ride, too. During this warm season, we'd like to remind all bicyclists to take safety along for the ride, too. Wear a helmet, approach intersections with caution, yield to pedestrians, and stay as far to the right as possible. Remember, motorists often don't expect bicyclists to be on the roadways. So enjoy the beautiful weather that's in our future and ride with caution. And take safety along for the ride, too.
Finally, very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel here with you, joined tonight by Kyle.
Hey.
Even Amy didn't finish this. We aired everything that was sent to us, but she's continuing the conversation online. So we didn't cut it off. Sorry about the late start and losing 25% of our show because somebody pressed the button 15 minutes late. But okay, here we are finally with our abbreviated edition, not because of sports for once.
Yeah, I was just going to say it's refreshing to know that we can be screwed in ways other than sports.
Yeah, that's a good way to look at it. How have you been this week other than this?
I'm actually pretty happy. I'm, like, enthused by springtime. All these clear skies. We had clear nights. I mean, it's been really overcast and so on and so forth going toward the spring season. But it's been beautiful. And we saw the space station.
We saw the damn space station again. Well, no, I was happy about it then.
That was great.
It was bright. Saturday night?
Really bright. Hugely starry night. Fullest magnitude we've ever seen, and in our darn near our backyard.
Yeah, pretty much. All the Northeast pretty much was able to see it. Because
it was,
for once, the skies were clear.
Astonishing. And it was really, really cool, and still cold enough to wear a coat. Not quite summer, but it was great weather for observing the sky. And it just gets me excited for the nicer weather, for being outside a bit more, for things to look forward to. I don't know. I'm altogether. I want to be oblivious to news stuff and politics because I'm more excited about other things going on.
Yeah.
So I think cool science things and. I want to focus on the positives. So that's it.
Just to let people know, because talking about the space station and people who might not have seen it, you can see it tonight. I just looked it up actually, and throughout the Northeast, and the sky is clear today. That's why I think today might be a good day. It's only going to be half as bright as it was on Saturday, but it's still going to be pretty bright. Probably one of the brightest stars in the sky. 8:39. Look in the northwest sky, and it'll move to the northeast. Last about 5 minutes. So starting at 8:39, you probably won't see it until about 8:40, 8:41. But you'll see it moving across the sky, kind of like a fairly bright star, but not a hugely bright star. If you want something much brighter, it'll be much brighter on both April 2nd and April 4th. Actually, April 2nd, 3rd, and 4th is going to be very bright. The brightest one on the 4th. So, you haven't missed it. It's always going to be up there.
Yeah, and if maybe you've seen it, bring someone out who hasn't seen it. That is a great feeling, introducing someone to observing satellites and things in space, especially young people, kids, and kids of all ages, as is said. It's a great way to open people's eyes, literally, and show them something that is all around them and they may not observe. And that just brings in more excitement, and it's a great feeling to introduce someone to that. So by all means, enjoy that. And, that was a real treat for us. And, it got my mind off things. Yeah.
Didn't see the Northern Lights. So supposedly they were going to be visible this
weekend.
That's right. But I didn't expect to see that because I don't believe they exist.
Well, we've been foiled. We've looked and tried and searched and traveled, and it has eluded us to this day. But apparently, yes, there was a solar storm of sorts, and that has brought the Borealis much lower. But unfortunately, we didn't catch that. We'll let you know when we do.
We've been to Iceland. We've been to northern Norway. We've been to the Atlantic Ocean, the Pacific Ocean. Looked everywhere. Never see the damn things. But I don't know. One day. We did see a total solar eclipse, so that was kind of good. Without glasses too, because when it's a total one, you can take the glasses off. That was amazing, and in fact, we even broadcast it on off the wall as we were looking at it when that happened a couple of summers ago from Tennessee. You have to seek out these things sometimes, and you never know what's around the corner.
We're probably building up to it. Yeah, there will be a spectacular display for us in the future. I'm speaking into that. Yeah, hopefully that's real.
Did you hear the all-female spacewalk got canceled because they didn't have the right fitting spacesuit for females?
I was really bummed about
this. NASA, come on, get your act together. You didn't think this through beforehand? You had all these opportunities to try it out, to make sure, and you had ships going up there delivering more people and cargo. Easily could have thrown something on board. There's space for a wardrobe up there. So, yeah, now on Friday, instead of it being two women outside and one woman controlling things on the inside, they're going to introduce a guy into the mix because the spacesuits don't fit.
It just is, to me, an indicator that there were not enough women involved with packing for the latest of resupply missions. But we'll, I guess, ignore that. We'll put it aside. We'll accept this, heterogeneous bunch going out there, and perhaps in the future this will be celebrated and pushed back, albeit pushed back, but yeah, okay. It was a nice thought, and someday maybe NASA will make it a priority.
Yeah, someday during Women's History Month. That it was perfect, all right? It was all set up to go.
And you know how many angry little girls are out there right now?
Just this Friday, and they didn't figure this out until today or yesterday, and that means they didn't check until then. All this time to plan.
Oops.
So from now on, keep a wide assortment of spacesuit sizes up there, because you never know who's going to be dropping by.
They needed it not just size. I mean, maybe we get a spacesuit that has a bit more of a female cut, things that we're not just, dealing with less suit. Maybe we get something a little bit more specifically aimed towards female astronauts.
I never thought of that, but then again, I'm not in the business of supplying spacesuits. I don't have any spacesuits, so why would I think about that? But NASA, yeah, you should have thought about that.
Yeah.
All right, I'm done. Hey, elephant in the room, I guess.
Whoa.
No, there's not really an elephant in the room, Kyle. but we do have to talk about this a little bit, because it's on a lot of people's minds, and we are a forum for, expressing ourselves and, venting a little bit. And just, speaking on a personal level, with the events that we've all been following, obviously, I'm disappointed. I am very disappointed. I have faith in the legal system. I do. And I certainly believe that there was something to the charges, that this guy was not telling the truth, that the legal system would basically tell the truth and let the rest of the world know, who've been following this story intently, what actually was taking place. And so, when these developments came out, obviously it was disappointing. But, there's so much more we don't know. And that's the thing. That's what I'm holding on to. There are more facts here. We cannot jump to conclusions. We cannot say that, we know everything at this point. What we can say is that we expected to go in a different direction. We know that, what's being presented to the public is not the truth, not entirely the truth. We know, the person in question is a liar. We know these things, but we have yet to hear the specifics, I'm looking forward to that. I just hope people don't rush to judgment, don't rush to condemn. I think the media did their job, and I think the people investigating did their job. But we have to hear more specifics. What do you think, Kyle?
What I've felt coming out of this is that the law is malleable.
Mm-hmm.
Assuming you respect it in any way, and I think that's getting harder and harder. I think we're living in an era of lawlessness where there are laws, but really you don't have to follow them. And the malleability part, I just feel is how a lot of the malfeasance is occurring, is that people think that, I'll deal with it in court. I get enough lawyers on my team, and we'll just ride it out. And
right.
that is what's going on. And I also think that if there is a deep state, they're afraid. They're afraid of a backlash. That is
the deep state is afraid of a backlash.
I think that if there's any such thing,
for
I think
this?
I kind of do. I know that's it's a little counterintuitive.
Right.
I just feel that. The way this was presented,
mm-hmm.
I know it was probably diluted by the head of the Department of Justice. I know it was watered down a bit, and I think
did he really pay that much attention? The head of the Department of Justice. Do you really think that this registered that much on his radar? I mean,
Yes.
All right. All right. Well, I mean, you know, I haven't been following it that closely. Maybe there's more to it than I think.
But I'm putting that in quotations, uh-huh. Deep state. I'm just saying that the entities that may be involved and may find that, you know, may feel that there is a lot of culpability in this case.
Right.
I feel they are erring on a very, very cautious side, and they do not. They want to let this ride out.
But what are
to
they
the
afraid
election.
Of? That's what I don't get. What are they afraid of? I mean, you know, the guy's an actor. He's not even that good an actor. You know, why do they care so much? Why are they afraid? What is he going to do?
You're talking about Smollett, aren't you?
Well, yeah. What are you talking about?
Oh.
Oh, you thought no. Oh, Kyle, please. You don't know me very well. No, first we'll get to that. We'll get to that story. But this is more important. This happened today, where the prosecutors dropped the criminal charges against Jussie Smollett. And you know, I really thought they had the guy. I really thought this guy was guilty. And then this happens with no explanation. And you know, everyone, the media's getting condemned. Okay, that explains. I didn't think the deep state really cared about this, or the head of the Department of Justice. Now it makes sense. But why? Why would they suddenly drop all the charges? You know, they said this guy lied about the attack, the quote unquote attack on him, and now all of a sudden, he has to forfeit the $10,000, but doesn't begin to cover the cost of the investigation. So what gives here, people? We need facts. We need information. And I'm not seeing it, but you know, let's not rush to judgment. I think that's always fair to say, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think he's a joke and can go straight to hell. So,
all right, now you're talking about Trump again. Okay, fine. Let's go to Trump. Yeah, that was a disappointment too, because over the weekend, the investigation ended, I think, on Friday, and details kind of leaked out a little bit, but such a small amount of details. All we heard, and this is like true Soviet-style releasing of information, all we heard was through Trump's attorney general. We heard a summation in his words. And we don't know what's actually in the report. We just know what this person has chosen to share with us. And a lot of what he has said so far is not exactly an endorsement of Trump. They're saying they don't clear him of wrongdoing. They're not charging him with being a Russian spy or operative. Okay, that's great. You really think that's a victory? That's like a really low bar there. They're not exactly, at least they haven't said anything that is really praising him or just saying things that you would be proud to hear said about you. But the backlash against the media, the backlash against the Democrats, that is kind of scary. That is kind of concerning to me because, you know, if somebody is cleared, of serious charges, you expect them to basically say, okay, I've been cleared, now let's get back to work, let's move on. Instead, what you're seeing Trump do is act like somebody who really is a criminal and swear vengeance on his enemies, the people who tried to get him in trouble. I'm hearing threats against Obama. I'm hearing threats against Hillary Clinton. I'm hearing
Adam Schiff.
I'm hearing threats against the media, the Democratic Party. Today, even it's like he's attacking the American people. I saw a news headline saying that Trump regime is now threatening to abolish Obamacare altogether, wiping out pre-existing condition coverage. All kinds of, millions of people will lose their insurance. Really, an attack on individual people that should not be tolerated. This is the kind of thing I'm seeing, and it's, you know, it's one thing to think of Trump as a cornered animal, somebody who his options are diminishing. It's something else to think of Trump as somebody who is overconfident and thinks that everybody is behind him and he can do no wrong. I'm not sure which is more scary. But the reactions that I've been seeing in the last few days, they are of great concern, and not just people on the right, people on the left as well, because a lot of them have this misguided notion that Russia can do no wrong, that the deep state, as you said, is calling all the shots, and that the liberal media is basically misreporting everything, elements of truth, and all of that, but missing the bigger picture. That this guy is a menace, that this guy is a criminal, You know, if you clear somebody of murder, it doesn't mean that they are not a different kind of criminal. There's certainly enough evidence to suggest that. Now, you know, we see the media being being completely attacked from all sides. What was the media exactly supposed to do? Because the investigation, here's another fact, the investigation was not started by the Democrats. The investigation was started by the intelligence agencies, by Republicans.
Rod Rosenstein?
Yeah, people who were appointed by Trump were the ones that were leading. I mean, basically Mueller was somebody who was a Republican. So it wasn't as if Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer were out there running this whole thing. They were following it, certainly. They were pontificating about it, but it's an investigation. That's what you do when an investigation is happening. So what was the media supposed to do? Not talk about it? It was happening. Okay, you have people on late-night TV with opinion shows, and that's all Rachel Maddow is an opinion show. We all know that. So were they supposed to do? That's what I don't get.
And long pauses.
Long pauses? She has long, yeah, I guess, but... I mean, you see what I mean? It's very concerning when you see, and this is coming from the left and the right, the press being attacked as if they were the ones who made all of this up. Mueller was not wasting his time. He investigated things. We don't know everything because we haven't seen everything. And I'm hearing that there is going to be increased pressure to not release the information to us, even though the House of Representatives voted unanimously to release all of the information, even though many, many Republican senators were saying exactly this. Well, now all of a sudden they're singing a different tune. Like, why do you need to know that? You know, why do we need to hear this? Let's move on already. No, we're not moving on. We need to know the facts. That's what this is all about. And we're not going to just get the facts from the mouthpiece of the person being investigated. That makes absolutely no sense. And until they release those facts, full stop. You know, let's not let a single bit of anything happen until we get the facts. We deserve that.
Yeah, I'm on board 100% with that in the theoretic sense, but I'm tired of railing against this. I'm tired I'm just really, really exhausted of trying to get people to wake up and encourage the right thing. I can be just as apathetic and, you know, mind my own business and enjoy my life like everyone else who doesn't care or wants to just let this go on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they enjoy it. You know, they have meaningful and pleasant isolation from all of this. And that's it's looking comfortable, and I know that's wrong, but it's very much seeming as though this is about moving to 2020 completely.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, like, the leadership of the Democrats, like Pelosi, had it right. And I think what we're starting to hear with the campaign run-up and a lot of the candidates speaking to specific things, think about how much has been lost, not in what the media focused on or what a diversion the entirety of this has been. But healthcare is one thing. There are so many aspects during the last 2 years, the last 4 years of our country's progress that have been either completely sabotaged and disrupted or totally fallen by the wayside, ignored. They're not important. And that is to me a total tragedy. The leadership has really absconded all responsibility for the kinds of things that were possible, and we are getting more of these sort of historic attitudes and a real regression, I think, or a retrograde type of government that absolutely none of us deserve. And I personally, I am more polarized than ever. Anybody that has supported this administration, I'm not your friend. We're not talking. That is absolutely right. If that was a foreign actor that did that, I don't know. Maybe. Yeah, I guess that's maybe in the report. Whatever the case, you are complicit with this total mockery of our branches of government, our institutions, the law, I was starting to speak to that. We're essentially lawless. I know there are laws on the books. I know, you know, Mr. Officer will try to flex something if you speed.
We're a nation of laws, Kyle.
No, we're not. No.
That's what it says.
No. De jure de facto distinction is very important here. Again, yeah, there's stuff on the books, but in practice, it does not seem to be applied. And that's what I mean by malleable. Everybody wants to just go to court. You know, people think of America as a litigious society. Oh, we'll sue you, we'll sue them, I'll sue you for thinking of suing me over the lawsuit. Like, it is a circular, endless conversation that only enriches lawyers. And it is a complete exercise. It is a self-fulfilling prophecy that will never end and keeps us going nowhere. It is the nation of stagnation. We are flourishing only the rituals of legal practice, but the justice aspect of what our nation stands for has been vaporized. I don't see any fairness, and I just think it's a joke. Everything about this country is a joke. If you have enough money, if you want to break the laws, if you want to dodge taxes, you want to whatever you want to do. You want to as long as there's a bottom line and a board of directors and revenue, you can poison your neighborhood, your community, whether it's physically or emotionally, mentally. It's anything goes these days, and it is pretty sad, and I'm thus apathetic. I'm done campaigning. I can't help anymore.
Now you're apathetic, so it spreads. It's contagious. Give us a call. Tell us if you're apathetic or not. Obviously, if you don't call, that means you are. 631-632-9872. That's our online number. If you want to pledge, if what you're hearing on our radio waves, whether it's the show before this, the show after this, or even this show, call our pledge line, 631-632-6901, as we are in pledge drive mode. We would like to hear from people, and people out there are extremely important in so many ways. And, you know, what Kyle speaks to definitely resonates because, you know, we see around the world, we see people who seem to care a whole lot more. You have the yellow vest protesters who have been showing up every single weekend for as long as I can remember, almost a half a year now. Their complaints are legitimate complaints, but they pale in comparison to some of the things that are going on in this country that we don't turn out for. You see school kids all throughout the world walking out of class because of climate change, because they're not happy with what their government is doing. These are countries that are still signed on to the Paris Climate Accord. Our country backed out of that, and we seem to just be taking it. I know people are having seminars and all kinds of petitions and things like that, but we need more. We need to be loud. We need to be vocal. We need to be obnoxious. We need to be getting in their face, shutting them down, showing them who has the real power. And we don't do that. We don't do that in this country, and I don't know why. I don't know what it is that tells us we have no power, that we have no voice. But whatever that is, it's working because people don't exercise that power, that voice. And it's sad. It's sad to see a country like this fall because people are complacent, because they simply don't care or can't be bothered or are too busy just trying to make ends meet. And little by little, things fall apart, whether it's healthcare, whether it's infrastructure, whether it's education, all sorts of things that we used to take for granted just stop existing or stop thriving. We can be doing so much better, but in order to do that, we have to be out there speaking and getting our opinions heard and vocalized. And yeah, not seeing it on our front lines, not seeing it in the streets, not seeing it on the news. It's it makes me wonder, where are we going to be in even 10 years from now at this rate? You know, Trump, or whatever evil he does, he knows how to play the game, and he knows how to keep surviving somehow, no matter what he does. What he said about shooting somebody on Fifth Avenue, very true. He could probably do literally that and get away with it. And we let him. We let others do this as well, and it's sad.
Yeah. I just feel like the average person is more afraid of like a parking ticket than the actors that are committing obscene acts of corruption. There ought to be consequences, and what we're seeing is that there are not. There are not. You can be this creature of that, and we're going to hold the average citizen parking a car to a higher account, and it's a mockery. It's really pathetic, and I'm not as upset, but I really hope that there are steps taken that people really take control and are active, take an active role in their community about some of the instances of corruption and things that you're seeing are all around you, the future that is upon us is just going to be more of this, and I'm really kind of at a loss. I think a lot of people are disillusioned, a little bit of like that derangement syndrome they keep saying, but it's not that. I think it's just more disillusioned because there seems to be so much outrage and upset over what's going on, but not enough organization, not enough actual culpability and an expression of accountability. You know, it just is. It's outrageous, and I want to be more positive and excited for the future. There's so much I felt, you know, could be possible, even in under an administration like this. In the face of it, whether it's economic or otherwise, we've had plenty of conversations about infrastructure and, you know, transportation is suffering in this country. There is so much positivity and encouragement, but at every single opportunity and turn, the people, the controlling interests, make the wrong choice. Even if it's labeled and branded and has a facade of a good choice, it's the wrong choice.
Right. Solar power is bad. Wind power is bad. Renewable energy is bad. Coal is good. You know, anything that pollutes is good. Drilling in the ocean and having leaks everywhere. Yeah, let's pursue that. Every bad choice you can possibly think of, that is the choice that is being made. And if you disagree, your voice doesn't count. They'll just override you somehow. They'll pack the courts. They'll gerrymander. They'll do all kinds of cheating. They'll take away the power of a governor if he wins from a different party. You know, and it's at some point you just feel like there's no way you can win. But, of course, that's not true. The only way you don't win is when you stop playing. And, yeah, I think that's what we're looking at right now. Our phone lines are dead. Not one single call has come in. Not one single call. And I know people listen because we hear from them. We talk to them. We see the stats of downloads. People have given up. People have given up thinking that they have a voice, that they have power, that they can affect any change. And we're weary. We're tired. We're tired of hearing about this over and over again, and it never gets anywhere, and we just wind up in the same place or worse. And that's sad. That's sad because, you know, we can deal with evil. Evil is always going to be there. But when we don't believe in ourselves anymore, when we stop thinking that our voice is going to be the voice that makes a difference, when we stop talking, that's when we truly lost. And I hate to say it, but I'm seeing more and more of that.
Just look at religion a lot, like the imposition of Christianity, Christian values, and those attitudes, the double standard for that over Islam and other religions. They're considered secondary. They're not as important. And the same creatures that are using those attitudes and that base as a vehicle for their power are the most non-devout and ill-religious people you could imagine. Have you ever seen Trump in a church?
Oh man, I would pity the church.
Yeah,
Trump in it.
They're a joke. Mm-hmm. All of them. I'm really sick of it. I think we are steadfastly becoming a theocratic republic. I mean, it is just going to continue the like double standards and the insanity that is being imposed on everyone, the put up or shut up, the you're either with us or against us. That polarity is breaking us.
Well, okay, so that's where we stand on that issue. Now, what do you think? What do you think is going to happen next? What do we have to look forward to? Because I think, you know, we might sound negative and in despair, and there's a degree of that. But I actually think that what is happening right now is a good step. I think having this report finished, I think having it being released in the way that it's being released, i.e., piecemeal and very incomplete. I think that is showing the true colors, and I think what we're seeing, the reaction that we're seeing from the Trump administration right now, namely that of vengeance and thinking that they are completely vindicated on the side of right, I think that's the best place for them to be, because that is when they're going to get cocky, that is when they're going to make mistakes, that's when they're going to lash out and do all kinds of irrational things, and that might be when people finally start to realize that this is something that we can take down and that we have to take down if we're going to preserve this place. And, we're starting to see the effects of that now. But, you know, in a couple of weeks, if they don't release the information, the deadline, I think, of next Tuesday that the House has set to get the entire report, if they don't do that, hopefully basically means that something else will happen to force them to do this, and if they continue to do irrational things, if they start trying to prosecute people for daring to investigate or question or report or all sorts of things, like I think they will do, then we see the danger that we're facing. We see the beginnings of tyranny, and it's my hope that people will stand up for what's right.
Yeah, I mean, I want to think this is the end of tyranny, and that yes, this alleged exoneration, which is not an exoneration, is somehow a honeypot for a cavalier attitude that is only going to trip up. But you know what? No, it's not enough. I'm not putting any kind of faith in that at all. At all. I don't care. I will be surfing. That's where I'm going. I don't care anymore. Let it be. That's fine. 2020, if that's what we're going to do, fine. I'll see you when we vote. But if this is the rule of the day, this is the game we're going to play in America. So, yeah, I'll let my representatives do their jobs. I'm sure they'll keep everything nice and busy down there in D.C., and I'll be catching waves. Bye-bye.
You see what you've done out there? You see what you've done to Kyle? And this is happening. This is happening everywhere. People are just kind of walking away and saying that it doesn't matter anymore. Wow, he's serious, too. Let's hear from one person. Is there one person out there that has a voice that is willing to use it? 631-632-9872. You don't have to pledge. Just call us up and talk on the radio. You tell us we're full of it, or tell us that you agree, or tell us you have an idea, or tell us you're giving up, or it's all hopeless. We want to hear from somebody. We want to know people are out there and listening and thinking. Otherwise, what's the point? 631-632-9872. We're here for another 5 or 6 minutes. Unfortunately, it was an abbreviated show, but...
I'm pacing around the room. I'm wringing my hands. I just got to, I got to take some breaths here.
Yeah, well, I hope somebody calls in, because it's really depressing to see all this happen.
They're afraid, too.
Well,
but we do need pledges.
I think they're just fed up and tired, but, you know, this conversation doesn't stop just because of a setback or because of a result that you weren't expecting. It's an ongoing process, and it depends on you. Hey, we have a phone call. There's a human being out there. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall. Is anybody out there? Okay. I hit the wrong button. That was my fault. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Hi.
Sorry about that. What's on your mind?
I just was thinking about the Jesse Smollett. I don't watch. I don't even know what show he's in, but now everybody knows of him because he's on the news. And it just made me think, it seems like something went wrong. We don't know the details, that he wasn't, I don't know, he didn't get into any trouble. But then I started to think, you know what, those cops could have been doing something else instead of investigating. You know, they could have been chasing robbers. But how many times do we see cops killing young black men? Maybe he saved a few lives that night. if he did that.
Interesting perspective. So by tying them up, he basically kept African-American kids safe from the cops roaming the streets.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure he didn't have that in mind. And again, I don't even know if he's guilty of what they're accusing him of. I don't know. I don't really care. It's just I've watched too many times black men killed, cold blood, officer after officer, you know, just walks. Have their job, or they get a paid vacation.
It's happened at least once or twice this last week. But,
right.
You know, the interesting thing about the parallel with this case is that the people who are berating those who have been following the Trump story, they're the same people that have been assuming from the beginning that Jussie Smollett was lying. Well, those people now, are they going to respect what the law has said, namely that, okay, we're dropping all charges, ergo he did not do anything wrong? Are they going to line up and say, oh, I'm sorry, I was quick to judge this guy? No, of course they're not going to do that. They're going to keep attacking him. They're going to keep saying that he's lying. But they'll continue to berate anyone that suggests that Trump has done anything wrong.
Right, exactly. Thank you.
Thanks for your call. And we have another call. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall. Go ahead. Please turn on your radio. Are you there?
Hey.
Yes. How you doing?
How you doing, guys?
You have a very dynamic phone there. What's on your mind?
Oh, sorry. I'll turn the radio off. No, I was just listening to the show. I listen all the time. You guys are great. And it's relieving to know it.
See, I told you we had listeners. We have listeners who listen to us all the time. This is proof.
It's relieving to know that you guys are, you know, there's people out there feel the same way that I do. And, it's a really bad, it's just depressing. It's really, it's a depressing time.
What is the most depressing thing for you?
I feel like there's so much divide politically in this country right now, and it's just pushing. I feel like it's just pushing people further and further away from each other. You know, Trump, non-Trump. It creates more, and it's like you were saying earlier, it's a cycle. It just keeps feeding back into itself. And I almost feel like this might be I hope I'm wrong, but it might be the beginning of the end.
Yeah, well, I don't know what that means.
Current system.
Maybe the system does need some kind of updating, because, you know, when you see how quickly New Zealand was able to deal with a problem and how mired we are in the ways of the 1700s, maybe it is time for some updating, but there are a lot of people who firmly believe that's not the case. We do need to have a dialogue, and cutting people off and not communicating, that's not the way to achieve that dialogue. That's not the way to make those changes. You know, it's important that there be people who disagree with you in your life, and that you know how to communicate with them, and that you find that common ground, because that's really the only way we can move forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Good point. It's just getting really very polar.
Yeah.
You know?
I think I hear you, and I've talked to a lot of people. I know that, unfortunately, I think there are a lot of people that fantasize about a civil war of some kind, and they want some kind of unrest in this country. And I don't want to say it's on one side or the other, but I think there is a lot of fetishization of violence in this country right now. People,
absolutely.
They don't. Their brains hurt when they have to think about things that don't appeal to them. And I hate to say it, but technology has conditioned us to behave this way. And there is a fetishization of gunplay and violence. And I have years ago, friends in Europe were anticipating this. This is a possibility for our country. And I've heard it when I go back west. I know people on all sides of the political spectrum are in the back of their minds turning into Civil War preppers. And to me, it is completely sad and an example of the disintegration of our political and social culture in this country. And, you know, the example that bothers me most about this report is the installation of different actors, like Bill Barr coming right into place and the appointments and this kind of stuff. So, you know, it just seems like an active effort to, you know, on one hand, it's just an ebb and flow. Like, oh, it seems like these people have this, and okay, that's going to bolster us, back us. Then this guy's, oh, right in time, just in time, they get their guy. You know, it just on and on it goes. So, yeah, that I definitely hear you.
Absolutely. That's a good point, Moore.
Hey,
guys.
Thanks for your call.
Going.
Thank you. Thanks for the encouragement.
Thanks.
All right. It's good to hear from listeners. And really, never underestimate the effect that you have. That not just with us, but with the people around you, and that it includes the people that you view as being on the other side. Yeah, okay. Some people talk about civil war. I don't think it has to come to that because it's pointless. First of all, we'd lose because we don't have the guns. But regardless, they would lose too because they don't have the big guns, and the big guns are in the hands of the government. That's not going to change. But we can affect change. We can do these things. We had a million people marching in England, in London, over the weekend to say, hey, have a second referendum for this Brexit nonsense. That is the biggest promise that there will be a second referendum when people turn out and voice their outrage, voice their opinions, voice their demands. When you do that, it doesn't matter how many guns you have. Doesn't matter how, you know, how certain news channels portray you. It's that showing up. That's what matters. That's what makes the difference. And know what you believe in. And listen. Listen to all sides. Communicate. Be open. It's only the beginning. And a week from today, hopefully we will have the full report, and at least in the hands of our representatives. We'll see. But there'll certainly be more developments. There'll certainly be more more things happening in the week ahead and the many weeks after that.
Okay, we're going to start the show now?
Yeah, you know what? I want to talk to you about that. We'll be back next week with hopefully a full show. We'll see. Stay tuned for Finn. Please donate to the radio station. Keep us going. WUSB.FM. We'll see you next week. Have a good night.
Bye-bye.